Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, October 28th, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, like clockwork. We are here, and I want to thank all of you for joining us and listening in, and we'd love to hear from you, so please give a call, and you can listen live or ask questions to our fabulous guest today by dialing 347-857-2710. Those 10 digits again are 347-857-2710. We are here till 3:45 p.m. Pacific time, and you can also email me at goodvibe, VIBE experience at gmail.com. Love to hear any thoughts or concerns, questions, whatever. Tell me a joke. I could always use it on the air. A little brief announcement. I am participating in the Los Angeles Memory Walk. It's the 10th anniversary of my mother's passing from Alzheimer's, and would love your support. Join me in Los Angeles if you're in the hood on Sunday, November 7th in Century City. Or just join in online. We'd love to have you by just logging on to www.alzla.org/MW for Memory Walk. So take a look at the webpage. If you can make a donation to support this worthy cause, it would be most appreciated. Well, today we're going to have a lot of fun because we have solutions to what seems to be a big problem here, not only in Los Angeles, but around the country. The unemployment rate in Los Angeles is around 12%. And from what I understand, other cities around the country are also experiencing a similar rate of unemployment. So don't touch your dial, because my guest today has information and solutions to this really fickle job market. Well, my guest today is Susan W. Miller. She's the founder of California Career Services, and she's going to be in the hot seat today. And here's what one client has to say about Susan Miller and her fabulous team. And I quote, "Your expertise far exceeded my expectations. You immediately identified and offered solutions to my key career issues. The resources you provided me with will be invaluable." And that is definitely the truth. As a national certified career counselor with a master's degree in counseling psychology, Susan has conducted a private career counseling practice in Los Angeles for over 20 years, and she has written numerous articles for LATimes.com on jobs in Los Angeles, and has also served on an advisory board for Catalyst, a think tank in New York devoted to enhancing women's position in the workplace. So, ladies and gentlemen, your wait is over. Here she is. Please welcome Susan W. Miller. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Lauren. What a great introduction.
You know what? I'm pretty proud of myself. It was good, wasn't it?
It was fabulous. You are the best.
But it's all true. It's all true. What I have to say, it's all true. You are the goddess, the guru. You have very helpful information about how we can get unstuck in any job or career that we're trying to pursue. And so where do we begin? When somebody calls California Career Services, where do you take the initial client?
Well, we don't have any kind of set program. We work with our clients on what we call a career action contract basis, which means they leave our office with a things-to-do list. We're very action-oriented. And the first question we ask a client when they come in is, why are you here? What do you want from career counseling in general? And how do you want to focus this session in particular? Based on their answer to that question, that's how we spend the time. So if somebody says, I don't know what I want to do with the rest of my life, we're going to start with the interview and assessments and figure out options. And then one of the things we really pride ourselves on in our office is that we have localized, very good, detailed labor market information. So not only can we do assessments and let people find out more about themselves, but we have lots of really great information so they can find out about the local labor market. So some people are at that phase. I don't know what I want to do with the rest of my life. Other people are trying to make career decisions of one kind or another, or are having a particular problem at work. And other people that we see need help with their job search. They need resume prep, interview coaching, and the youth need to learn how to use both traditional and non-traditional job search strategies and resources. So
what
we
would you say
work
is
with people on any career-related issues.
Career level. So is there a – what is the most common issue within a job search that you're experiencing now with what's going on in the job market?
People are not following up. There are jobs available. There are definitely jobs available, but there is much more competition for jobs. So the length of time it takes to get a job has lengthened considerably. It used to be, you know, that people would get a job within 3 months of their starting their search. Now it can take up to 9 months, and even longer for, you know, in some professions and areas. So there's keen competition out there, and what I'm finding is people are using the internet for their job search, which there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. It's a wonderful job search resource, but they're not following up. And if you don't follow up and you're just sending things out by email and you're not snail mailing things too and you're not following up, you know, I haven't heard from you in the last 2 weeks. I sent you my resume, you know, attach, please find my brief bio, or attach, please find a love letter I received from my last boss, or, you know, you've got to follow up because the name of the game is follow up, follow up, follow up. You want to be the person that people get to know. And the other reason why you have to do more than just send out emails is that your email oftentimes either goes into a spam folder or somebody at the company where you're applying is going delete, delete, delete.
Right. So you have to get in front of the decision maker somehow.
Yes. And, you know, to even get your resume read and so forth. And so I would say the biggest problem that I'm seeing right now is that people are not following up. They think they're doing a great job search if they're just sending out resumes on the, you know, via email, responding to job postings. And, you know, a much more effective job search strategy would be to look at the jobs you're qualified for, look at the companies where you want to work that are geographically desirable for you, and make a direct approach to the actual department in that company where you would like to work, whether or not there's a job available that you see on their website or not. And then when they say, oh, we don't have anything open now, to try to see if you can get in to do some kind of informational interview or, you know, meet somebody or a collegial, you know, have a collegial meeting. Gee, I just worked on blah, blah, blah. I understand you're working on da-da-da. I'd love to share with you. Would you be available for a 15-minute coffee? You know, I mean, you know, anything that you can do to get your, you know, the whole paper-pushing thing with getting a job, the goal of it is to get yourself in front of somebody.
That's true, and I think this type of conversation comes up more frequently than not because I think it's about selling yourself, and some people are hesitant to sell themselves and say, I'm really good at this job, why don't you give me a 30-day trial, and if it doesn't work, then we part, but you know what I'm saying? People just tend to take what's ever offered to them as that's the answer.
Right. That's what I tell my clients. No does not mean no. No means not right now. And then so if you get a no, you want to know what you're going to say after you get the no. You know, we don't have any jobs available now. How often have you hired in your department? You know, do you expect that there will be some growth and you'll be needing additional staff in the next 6 months? You know, so you need additional questions. You don't just say thank you very much and hang up the phone, which is what we're all tempted to do when we get the no.
Well, would you suggest, I know, a more creative approach, like you just mentioned about getting in front of the person that you're interested, let's say going to that particular office and talking to, as I like to call, the gatekeeper, which is the receptionist, because I always feel that person is one of the most powerful.
If you present very well in person and you're comfortable doing that, I would say that might be outside a lot of people's comfort zone. And what you're going to get told when you do that is we only accept resumes online.
I know.
But,
they don't make it easy.
Yeah, they don't make it easy. But if you're comfortable doing that and you say, you know what, I sent my resume online. I just wanted you to see a live person. Do you mind if I leave it with you? You know, would you please tell so-and-so that I stopped by?
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know what, I think a lot of people, and maybe you do this because I know you do, you help people with the interview process itself, but I think people also need a dialogue of what to say if someone says, I'm sorry, we only accept interviews online. People, like you said, are fearful to maybe think on their feet, or they don't know what's appropriate to say, and they're unable to engage.
Right, and that's where rehearsal comes in. You know, J. Paul Getty, one of the more successful people that we all know of, used to think about, before he went into a meeting, he used to think about what is the worst thing that can happen in this meeting. And then he would think about ways that he would overcome that thing if it came up or if it occurred. And then when he went in the meeting, he had already, you know, kind of dealt with in his own mind the most difficult possible problem and how he would overcome it. So he felt very comfortable and confident. So that's, in a sense, what you're saying is, you know, can we rehearse, you know, what we would say, you know, when we're getting this rejection from the gatekeeper?
Right.
How we say it and, you know, so on.
Well, I think
so that we would feel comfortable going and doing something like that.
Exactly, and because there are limited amount of jobs, and we might be under stress to say, "Oh my God, I'm so desperate." Coming from a place of desperation, I need this job, and not really coming from a place of confidence and the qualities that you have, and selling those when you go to the gatekeeper or whomever, or foraging, wherever, whatever industry you're trying to pursue, where do people who work in that industry forage?
Well, professional association, trade association meetings and conferences are a fabulous place to network, I have to say. That's a wonderful thing to do. And writing articles, or offering to make presentations at your professional association conference or meeting is a great thing to do. And then once you've written an article, you have it reproduced and you send it around to everybody by snail mail and also by email, so that, you know, it's a way of letting people know you're out there and you're doing things and so forth. And it's a way of making yourself a more attractive candidate. So writing and speaking, you know, can be very helpful, and you know, letting your peers see what you're up to. You know, staying visible, in other words.
Exactly, and I think with all the social media, as far as websites and not necessarily having a personal connection with someone, I truly think that the bottom line is people hire who they know. In a sense, or it comes from somebody, not to say that you can't submit your resume somewhere
right.
and get a job.
Well,
but
I think what's also happening is when you put an ad on Craigslist, if you're an employer and you have an opening, you put an ad on Craigslist and you are getting hundreds of resumes and nobody wants to sift through them. And so, you know, you've got somebody going delete, delete, delete very quickly. And the person who's going to get hired might be the person who does show up at the door, you know, or who makes themselves into the known person who will follow up and say, 2 weeks ago I sent you my resume and here's something additional. I hope this will interest you in wanting to meet with me.
Yeah, it's about being proactive. And like you said, the follow-up is part about being proactive. And people just don't go to that next step.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And maybe the interview process is also daunting, which, I mean, for me personally, I know I'm much better in person than on paper. Because I kind of can survey a room, find out what matters to that person, what's important, and engage in a conversation in that light. And tell me, what are some common mistakes that people make in the interviewing process?
Not preparing and practicing in advance is the most common mistake. People think they can just go and wing it. And, you know, you need to be prepared. You need to practice. You need to do the J. Paul Getty, you know, what's the worst question I'm going to get asked? What are the yes buts about me? And how am I going to respond if those come up? So,
okay, well, I have one question. And I often wondered, I don't know why employers ask this, but it's always difficult to answer. When someone asks you, what kind of salary are you looking for?
Well, there are several ways to answer that question. In this economy, if you're desperate for a job, what you're going to say is, salary is not the issue for me. I really want this job. And I'm sure that if you're going to offer it to me, you're going to offer me something commensurate with my skills and experience. Another way to, when somebody first brings up salary, because you as the job seeker should not bring up salary. So if the other person that's interviewing you brings up salary, there's a very aggressive, assertive way to respond by saying, oh, I'm so glad you're ready to talk to me about salary. Does that mean you're ready to offer me the job?
That's so beautiful.
You're trying to close the sale. I mean, that's a very assertive thing to do, and a lot of people are not going to be comfortable doing it, and a lot of interviewers are going to be put off by that. So if you're going to do that, you have to be very comfortable, and you have to do it with a certain amount of style. Now, the other way to answer that question is to say, I'm aware that people with my skills and experience are earning anywhere from blank to blank. Naturally, I'd like to be at the upper end of that scale. So, you know, there are several ways to answer that salary question. You can ask, you know, what is the salary you have in mind? Can you share that with me, and I'll let you know if I'm in your ballpark.
But I like how you said about closing the deal, and as I mentioned earlier about it's a sale, you're selling yourself. So if you get the interview, you're in that small percentage that might be guaranteed the job. So now you do have to kind of close the deal. And how do you do it? Because you don't know if whether you're going to get another opportunity. Maybe there's a second interview in this process.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get to the next level? So getting the appointment, I think you're kind of halfway there. So if you can be courageous and find a way within your own style to close the deal, that's really what it's all about, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. You're right. You know, when you leave an interview, you should say, you know, what's your time frame for making a decision on this position? When can I expect to hear from you? Would it be comfortable for you if I call you, if I don't hear from you by such and such a date, you know, et cetera. So you want to, again, you want to take some responsibility for the follow-up.
So, yeah, it's about being proactive. Why do you think people are not proactive and follow up? What is the you know, you have a psychological background. What is the thought behind that?
Well, I think there are a lot of different reasons why people don't want to be proactive. They don't want to be seen as too aggressive, as too needy. They're down on themselves, and they're going to say, "Oh, they're not going to hire me, and so why bother?" You know, there's a lot of discouragement right now among workers because there are so many people out of work. So, you know, people are kind of discouraged.
And I tend to think we self-sabotage. We find reasons why we wouldn't be appropriate for that particular position. And so why bother?
Right. Yeah, that's oftentimes true, that people will self-sabotage, which I think is, you know, self-sabotaging is not preparing for the interview.
Well, that's
and for
true.
Some of the, you know, really basic interview questions, like the tell me about yourself question, which is, you know, a real basic question, and you've got to be able to talk about your skills and how you've used them. And
I always like, why do you think we should hire you? Why do you think you'd be perfect for this position?
Right, that's skills and stories. There, if you do nothing more when preparing for a job interview than come up with what the skills are that you've used and how you've used them, stories and examples of how you've used them, then you will be ahead of most people. Because really what a job interview is all about is what are the skills you bring to this job and how have you demonstrated them in the past? So whether it's what, you know, why should we hire you instead of the other 10 people we're going to interview? You know, what can we do for you today? Tell me about yourself. What special qualifications do you have for this job? You know, all the answer to each one of those questions is skills and stories, interesting skills and stories that you can talk about.
That's a great book. I'm sure you're in the middle of writing it. Because I think it's beneficial. You know, I would probably have a cheat sheet in my hand. Okay, in the interview I was asked, okay, that salary question came up. Hold on a minute, let me check my cheat sheet.
Right.
How do I answer that?
You know, talking about the cheat sheet, I actually do, for some clients who are very nervous in interviews, I do recommend that when they can see the interview is winding down, that they might say to the person, you know, I was really looking forward to meeting with you, and I took some notes, and I just want to refer to my notes before we end this meeting to make sure that we've covered everything. And then you look at your notes, and if you say, oh, my God, I forgot to tell this person about this experience that's so related to this job, then, you know, it's like you have a chance to do that at the end, towards the end of the interview. So I think that's not such a bad thing to do, to have the cheat sheet.
That's very good, because unless people can take you with them virtually and you know, here's my associate, Susan Miller. She'll be happy to answer all questions because, you're a pro at this. It comes off the tip of your finger. Oh, I know how to handle that question. And again, I needed to relate job interviewing to sales because in my experience of helping people in a sales capacity, the best way people can get a better understanding is when you take them on a sales call, when you do personal selling. So people have an experience of what that means. It's a rehearsal, like a role play. So somebody sees it in action. And I kind of think it would be great if people could be privy to, okay, Lauren Leibowitz is about to go in on a job interview. Let's watch and listen, you know. And then you're in there and you're taking notes and you're saying, okay, this question was asked of Lauren. How did she handle it this way? Or she could have handled that question better by saying this. And so that's really, really helpful because a lot of people might not – be able to clearly understand what's going on unless they experience it firsthand.
Yeah, that's true. Years ago, we used to offer a service where we would offer to video people's interviewing, you know, doing a mock interview so they could see their body language and so forth, because body language is so, so important in interviews. But people really, very few people took advantage of that. Nobody really wanted to see themselves. So,
isn't that interesting?
Very interesting to me because I thought it was such a great learning tool, but people were very fearful about doing it. And so then, you know, what we do in our office, my associate Jean Brinko and I, is we will call people on things. We'll teach them about neuro-linguistic programming and mirroring the body language of the person who's interviewing you and so forth and so on. And if we see them, you know, doing too much stuff with their hands, or they're, you know, leaning back, and or they're folding their arms, and, you know, with kind of negative, you know, body language, will let them know.
But I also think that I guess when you go into an interview, you have to come in with your own sense of power of who you are, because you are going to be in a dialogue with someone else in power, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to give away your own power of being confident and who you are and
right. And that's again where the preparation comes in. If you've prepared and practiced, you're much more confident in a job interview than if you're just going to go in and wing it.
Yeah. And I also think it's about just being yourself. And I think that's a hard thing to conceptualize, because if somebody says, "Susan, just be you. You're outgoing, vivacious, etc. Just be that, and that's engaging." And then people will like that, and I think that people don't really have an idea of who they are. Like you said with the videotape, people don't want to know.
Yeah, but you just mentioned something very important, which is the likability factor. And that's really also what the interview is about, because, you know, your resume can tell the potential employer what your content knowledge is, what you know, that you have the degree, the master's degree in Asian studies and so on and so forth. It can tell them, you know, how great you are on the computer and all the languages you speak and all the functional skills that you have, too, that you're a good communicator, that you're good at making decisions, that you're good at resolving problems and so forth. But what an employer cannot see until they meet you in person is your affective skills, the likability factor, and that is very important.
But is that one of the primary reasons why someone brings you in? To see who you are in person, how you might fit into...
Right. First, you have to get through the resume, you know, with, you know, be qualified for the job, and then qualified candidates are brought in, and they're weeded out based on the likability factor to some extent, depending on the job.
Yeah. I wanted to get your opinion on this. I had an experience in an interview where someone said to me, I look at people and hire people based on their personality, meaning just like what we said, how likable they are, how their capacity to work with others, not necessarily based on their skills. Yes, they need to be qualified for the job, but if they're lacking in, let's say, a computer program, that is something that is teachable. But a person that has people skills or certain personality traits, you can't teach that. What is your thought on that, about how employers hire?
Well, again, I think it depends on the particular position. But, you know, because if you're a computer programmer and you're going to be sitting at the computer all day, maybe people don't care so much about your interpersonal skills. But if you have to interface with other people, of course that's important. And I think, it depends on the job. I remember years ago I was doing some consulting and training for a jewelry company, and they needed an HR person, and I had this fabulous woman, career counseling client, who was looking for a job in HR. And I said, oh, my God, I'm going to be able to make the little match here, even though, you know, I'm a career counselor. I am not an employment agency. And so I called my friends at the jewelry company, and they interviewed this woman, and they liked her a lot. But here was their comment: Susan, she's great, and she has great HR experience, but she doesn't know the jewelry business. So I was like,
well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, what are you going to do? People like to hire people who, you know, already know their business and, you know, have been in similar kinds of companies and so forth. But other people would have said, you know what, she's an HR person, she's great, we like her, she's really experienced, she's a great generalist, and we'll take her, we'll train her on what she needs to know about the jewelry business.
Well, that's where I'm saying that no matter really what the job is, those kind of qualifications are harder to find. You can always, and
right.
Maybe nowadays employers aren't training anybody. They want somebody that has
that can
all
hit
their
the ground running. Yeah.
Yeah, all their ducks in a row, and they don't want to be bothered with training, which I feel is something that you should always train somebody because it's your business, et cetera. But, you know, this HR person you're talking, she would be perfect. What do you need to know about the jewelry business that you can't train by learning on the job?
Yeah, well, obviously I still remember that, and it was many years ago, so, you know, I was shocked by that as well. But, you know, everybody has their things that they're looking for when they're hiring.
That's interesting. Yeah. Well, I think I, for someone like myself, would use my personality or anyone's personality to help sell themselves. Or if you know you're lacking in a particular skill, then you can also get some training on your own prior to,
mm-hmm.
you know, pursuing a lead somewhere. Well, you know, all the stuff you have recommended is very, very helpful, but I often am concerned with the young people that are graduating from college or trade schools and their opportunity to find employment. Is your advice to college students any different than someone that has already had a career and wants to change their career or they were laid off?
Well, with college students, I would say let yourself explore if you don't know what you want. You know, there's nothing wrong with a little job hopping when you're in your 20s. Don't stick with something if you're miserable. You know, you need to kind of do the career exploration and oftentimes have several different jobs and positions and be in different kinds of companies until you land someplace where you say, this is, you know, much more comfortable for me and now I can see a direction for myself and so forth. So whereas with older people where they already have, you know, have had a career, it, you know, particularly in the kind of economy we're in now, you really need to, if they want to be working, they need to take advantage of their knowledge and their background. But with young people just out of college, you know, they're going to get entry-level pay, and they should be looking at all kinds of different options for themselves.
Well, I think
it's always nice when you first graduate, you can try to use whatever it was you studied, your major, you know, if it was a specific major. You know, what a college degree tells an employer is I know how to learn, which is, you know, so if you have a degree in sociology, you know, and you say, well, how am I going to use a sociology degree? You know, I might be a teacher, I might, you know, be a caseworker or a social worker or, you know, depending on the kinds of classes, sociology classes I was most interested in, I might do something in labor, be a labor organizer or, you know, whatever. But,
Well, see, you can expand upon, and this is just a perfect example of what you're sharing with everybody, is if you are a sociology major, what opportunities are available for you in that degree?
Uh-huh.
And maybe, I know I didn't get the proper guidance in high school nor in college, and so it would have been helpful if there was somebody like yourself that said, okay, Lauren, this is where you're going. These are the opportunities available for you. So you don't feel, okay, wow, I spent 4 years in college and I have a sociology degree. Now what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do I have to go on to an advanced degree in order to earn a living for myself? Or is there something where I can take some of those skills in sociology and put them in maybe another field that's related?
Yeah, oftentimes people do not end up using their college major as, you know, in their career, you know, in a big way. But it just depends on the person. And
now, did you know this is the path that you wanted to take?
No, I didn't.
How did you begin your career?
Well, I think I became a career counselor for several reasons, but my mother, who is a brilliant woman, made some career decisions for myself and my sisters, And she sent us all to the same college and told us that we, when we graduated from college, we needed to be able to support ourselves. And she thought the best thing for us was to be teachers. And actually, I'm doing the thing that is closest to teaching, because I do a lot of training on career issues, and I'm really teaching my clients, you know, as a career counselor. But neither of my both of my sisters worked briefly in teaching as I did, and then one of them became a programmer analyst, a computer programmer analyst, and the other one became a dental assistant. So it's funny. So my mother chose the career, and I think part of, you know, the reason I became a career counselor was, you know, I just felt like I wanted to help people choose their own careers, because I knew after teaching for a few years, I taught little kids, that I wanted to broaden myself. And so then I went back to UC Berkeley and got my master's degree in counseling psychology. And then I started taking postgraduate coursework in the career area, because one of my first jobs was working for the California State Department of Education Career and Vocational Unit, but I was working on soft money, so I knew I had to have a plan B. And so that's when I started my career counseling practice, too.
And but I find it very interesting, your message that you were given as a young woman was to take care of yourself, to find a means to take care of yourself.
Yes, that part of it was very positive.
And what did your mother work? You said your mother was a career
woman? No, and that's one of the reasons why she was so interested in having us be able to support ourselves. My mother is still alive. She's a brilliant woman. And she graduated from high school and married my dad. My dad had graduated from Harvard and Harvard Law School. And my mother used to say, you know, if it weren't for Dad, I'd be selling hosiery at Saks Fifth Avenue. That was her thing. Not that there's much wrong with selling hosiery at Saks Fifth Avenue in this day and age. It could be a lot of fun, but
right.
But you know, that was the job that she would use, and she, you know, she wanted us to do more than that. And I have to say, another experience that I had that is similar to the selling hosiery in college kept me in college. Because on the weekends while I was in college and on Wednesday nights, I worked at a shoe store selling hosiery and handbags. And all the men in the shoe store who were selling shoes, none of them had college degrees. And I thought, wow, this is, you know, what happens when people don't have college degrees. They don't have a lot of options. So it kept me going in college, you know, to be working while I was in college and seeing that, you know, if I didn't finish, my options were going to be limited.
Well, you get an idea of what it's like to be out there.
Right.
And you never know what opportunities will present themselves in a in a part-time job in school. Maybe you'll meet somebody in another field and you say, "Wow, I'm studying sociology, but I think I want to go into law."
Mm-hmm.
Or any other category, and it's very interesting, because I think what we experience as children, as young adults, the messages and the beliefs that we hear and learn really push us forward in our direction, and until we can decide, wow, that's a great belief, or wow, I can thank my mother for helping me steer me in this direction. Or, wow, I could have been anything if I only had the support of my parents or other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
that's true. It's interesting. My mother says that my first career counseling client was my high school boyfriend who wasn't planning to go to college. And I actually called the college, it was Boston University, and got the application and helped him fill it out. And he ended up not only going to college, but I think getting a PhD in biology.
You see, you were destined for your career, but you
right.
didn't know it then.
You know, but that's the kind of thing you can only see when you look back, you know, at different experiences and put them all together.
Right. It's about self-exploration. I think some people know earlier than others what they want to be or an area that they want to pursue, and whether they've gotten any support in a particular area. I remember my guidance counselor in high school, at
wanted to get into UCLA, and he suggested, why don't you just go as a pre-biology major, and then you can change your major when you get into college. And I got in with a pre-biology major, but I never took any biology.
Oh, that's funny.
That's interesting.
And
it took me, you know, after 4 years, I had to go again, being a more creative person, wanting to pursue the creative fine art program. It was very difficult to figure out where I needed to go. And looking back in hindsight, I perhaps could have pursued more entrepreneurial quests had I known that they were available, which they were at the time, but I didn't get the guidance that I needed. And so you're very important in anybody's stage of life, but I also think it's so important to have someone like yourself in an academic situation where people can go to and say, gosh, you know, I don't like sociology, but I like this about it. Where can that take me? So the struggle when you're out there on your own, when you leave the nest egg, and then you go, what did I do?
Yeah. Well, lots of people are turning to entrepreneurial endeavors right now, because when you're out of work, you know, and you've looked and looked and you're not coming up with anything, doing some kind of entrepreneurial thing, if, you know, with some kind of consulting or whatever, is what oftentimes people turn to, and either tides them over or gets them going in a whole new direction.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, I hope your solutions and information will get a whole bunch of people on a new direction. And I don't know where the time went. We are almost out of time, but I want to give your contact information. So I'm sure you've sparked a little light in a lot of people. I know you have in me. You always do. So they can reach you at 323-933-2900 or toll-free at 1-800-63-CAREER. Or they can also log on to your website at californiacareerservices.com. Susan, you are such a delight, and I thank you for spending time with me on How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It was my pleasure to have you.
Oh, well, thank you, Lauren. Great to talk with you, as always.
As always, yes. And you'll keep us posted on new job and career achievements that are coming our way.
Ha-ha.
Well, I hope everyone will join me next time for another wild and crazy journey in someone else's shoes, when my guest will be Ryan Sage. He's the owner of Flask Fine Wines and Spirits. We're going to party next time. So once again, thank you to Susan W. Miller at California Career Services. Again, you can reach her at 323-933-2900 or 1-800-63-CAREER. This is Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you so much for joining me and listening to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. We'll see you next time, and I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes. We're going to leave you with Keith Chagall, and She's Incredible.